The Free Congregation of Sauk County is a Unitarian Universalist Fellowship and a welcoming congregation. That means our invitation is to all, and that all are welcome here regardless of race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender expression, or political persuasion. My name is Rob. I am a regular speaker here, but show up maybe 5 times a year. So it's possible you haven't met me yet. I grew up as a Christian and believed it with every inch of my body and moved slowly left over time until I fell off the edge. So now this is where I fit, and I'm very glad to be here. Today, as is our tradition, we light this candle, a symbol of reason, knowledge of truth, but also, by many traditions, a symbol of the afterlife, that we move toward the light. So we remember today that knowledge outlives us and that even endings don't have to be sad. Our reading today are selections from the Oxford Handbook of Eschatology. Eschatology means the study of the end times. It is not too much to say that some of the most passionately contested cultural, political, and social conflicts in our world today are rooted in competing eschatological claims. In a wide-ranging study of life after death in Western religions, author Alan Segal notes that while, ironically, life after death is affirmed by more Americans than belief in God, pause with that for a second, life after death is affirmed by more Americans than belief in God, and while most continue to affirm the resurrection, there is a fundamental divide over how Americans conceive of the nature of the resurrection. Whereas liberal believers hold either to the immortality of the soul, or at best a spiritual resurrection, evangelical and fundamentalist Christians and Orthodox Jewish believers insist on a bodily resurrection. Indeed, Segal suggests that the distinct line that divides conservative believers from liberal ones is, quote, the big story in American religion at the beginning of the 21st century, end quote. He goes on to point out that asking about an afterlife, quote, cuts to the quick of what we Americans think is important in life, end quote. Pause for a second. I went to school at Minnesota Bible College, got my Bachelor of Arts in Religion and Pastoral Leadership. And while I was there, I had a conversation with a friend, and I was explaining why I thought it was important to recycle. And my friend told me, yeah, I don't believe in that. It's all going to burn anyway. So what you believe about the afterlife impacts how you live today. Back to the quote. Broadly speaking, there are two extremes in the interpretation of Revelation. On one side are those who emphasize that it must be understood in its original context as a book to encourage Christians in the midst of persecution in the Roman Empire and to help them make theological sense of their suffering. The other side is represented by those who want to read the book as a detailed prediction of events in the 20th or 21st century, or in whichever century Christ returns. Others read the book as a message to its original recipients, or a message that also teaches important theological truths for Christians of all ages, including truths about the end of the world. The author politely does not confirm that one of those is correct. If there were no dogs in heaven, then when I die, I want to go where they went, says Will Rogers. And the last one from Mark Twain, a little more bitter, but very funny. Heaven goes by favor. If it went by merit, you would stay out and your dog would go in. Man, I love Mark Twain. I come today to stake my claim as a Bachelor of Religious Study and a Master of Divinities that the greatest moral philosophy of our generation was first broadcast on NBC in 2016. It premiered over a decade ago, or precisely just barely, not over. It will be a decade in a couple months. It premiered a decade ago. So I'm not apologizing for spoilers. If you haven't seen it, it's your fault. It's called The Good Place. There are a show of hands. All right, nice. Well done. If you have not seen it, there are four main characters. They are delightful. They wake up to discover they are dead. Aw. And they're in heaven. Yay! There's only one problem. And her name is Eleanor. Not our Eleanor. Our Eleanor is awesome. This is Eleanor Shellstrop, and she's the worst. She's not evil. She's just selfish in that, like, mindlessly unaware kind of way where they're just selfish without even realizing they're doing it. You know, like a president. Yet somehow, she's in the good place. It takes her about 5 minutes to figure out there's been some kind of mistake, but she's selfish, so she wants to stay. But this is heaven, and she can't fit in because she's selfish. So she has a real problem. Lucky for her, her neighbor is Chidi. And Chidi happens to be a moral philosopher. So Chidi takes her under his wing and teaches her moral philosophy in heaven so that she doesn't get kicked out. Which would be funny enough, except they're in hell. All four of them are messed up in their own very unique, hilarious ways, and they are all stuck pretending like they deserve to be in this place. Which would also be silly enough, except they figure it out. Well, Eleanor figures it out. And so the demon who's in charge of the bad place, who is Ted Danson, amazing, the demon has to just punt. Like, they figured it out, they broke the game, we gotta start over. So Ted Danson reboots the system. Crash. Eleanor figures it out. Reboot. Crash. Reboot. Crash. The whole thing breaks down, and that's when it gets interesting. It's redemption and justice and truth, and it never stops being hilarious. Not for six seasons. And if you haven't seen it, see it. And if you have, go see it again. It's been a decade and it still works because it draws on the stories that are so old in our history that they're practically subconscious. Last time I was here, we talked about the work of Dr. Ian Morris, who believes history can be divided into four big chunks. We've got the foragers, the farmers, fossil fuel, and whatever it is that we're starting right now. Here's hoping that whatever it finally turns out to be starts with an F, or we're just going to wreck it. Our farmer age past saw the birth of religion. The foragers had animism and ancestor worship, spiritualism. They had stories of a land of the dead where the shades just kind of hung out, ate dirt. And that wasn't really good enough for the farming age. The farming age is too hierarchical. They needed punishment. So in culture after culture, shaped like a pyramid, working to build things shaped like pyramids, they all invented the same story in different ways, and the story was always behave or else. The most famous one of those, in our culture at least, is the book of Revelation. And it doesn't even mean what people think it means. People think it's about the future. But it's a genre. Just like horror and mystery and rom-coms are genres. You watch a Western and you see a guy in a black hat walk out in the middle of the street and the bell strikes noon. No one has to tell you what's going on. You know what's going on. And if you get offended that you meet a bad guy and he's not wearing a black hat, it's not because Clint Eastwood lied to you. It's because you misunderstood the story. And that's what we do. We think that it is history and it's an apocalypse. Apocalypse takes that old be good or else story and it flips it. Apocalypse says, I know it's bad, but hold on. I'll be there soon. And those rich jerks are going to get it. Apocalypse exists to help people survive when they're being crushed under the wheel. And that's not the kind of story you can just post in the break room for everybody to read. Because the boss man reads it and now you're in trouble. So you have to write it in code. So there are 7 days in a week. 7 is the number of completeness and perfection. So what's like the worst? Well, that would be 666. That would be absolute imperfection. Then you meet, like, you get your new license plate and it says 666 on the back of it. And now you think your car is cursed. You missed the point. It was written in code. And we all read the exact same story and come up with 3 exactly different stories that are all completely 100% true and right, but at the same time confusingly incompatible, and then we yell at each other like Jesus wanted. That's what happens when you try and shoehorn a farmer age story into a fossil fuel world. We need new stories for new times. One of my favorite TikTokers bills herself as a secular spirituality advocate. If that strikes your curiosity, her name is Brittany Lowe Hartley, and the page is called No Nonsense Spirituality. She grew up deeply religious and desperate to believe, and found as she grew that she couldn't, despite her best efforts. Like a coat that no longer fit. Like many, she felt grief and anger, but she settled somewhere more positive. Quoting multiple scientific studies, she says with growing confidence that we need these stories. Culture after culture developed religion because it works. These deep stories provide social cohesion and emotional resilience. Which means we can't just disassemble them and expect people to face the void. It hurts. And she's not the first one to say it. Terror management theory says that what makes us unique among animals is that we fear our own death all the time. Terror management theory has been around since like the 70s. We are constantly aware of death, and it pushes us toward anxiety and depression. All animals feel stress and react to stress. Social animals feel loneliness and they react to exclusion. But we do this extra special thing where we sit in a pretty warm room surrounded by people who love us and we stare into the void. I have never seen a golden retriever stare into the void. Like maybe a cat. But we lack the equanimity of the feline, so the longer we stare, the more it hurts. And we tell ourselves stories. It's reality. Really, bro? Really? I have seen multiple men weep over football. You want people to face the yawning maw of meaningless with no support at all? What are you going to do? Take away Santa Claus and replace him with the Grim Reaper? Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Give you death and despair. People dying everywhere. So happy birthday. Have you seen the news lately? A sizable minority of our nation have decided that this experiment in democracy with its spherical planets and its vaccines is just too much work. We want to go back to the good old days when we could burn witches. My social media feed is 7 seconds after 7 seconds of unmitigated horror. And your mad people want a happy story? This is not a new problem. Sailors and vagabonds and traitors, they were always heretics. When you live on a ship or on the road or in a port, it's really hard to believe that your one special story is the only true story when you hear 50 other stories every day. We've taken that very old problem and we've turned it into a cultural requirement. In order to survive, you gotta be on Facebook. We have taken the demolition of meaning and turned it into one of the most profitable schemes of all time. And this is precisely why we need to go back and watch The Good Place again. Because they didn't fix it by figuring it out. They didn't fix it by uncovering the one true story that really worked. And they didn't settle for the cynical path of just believing in nothing and just do whatever. They confront the lies within and around them together. They make meaning just like humans have always done, out of thin air as a community. They decide, as friends, this is what we owe each other. That is way too deep for a comedy show playing on Thursday nights at 7:30 Central. That's philosophy in a really sweet wrapper. It reminds me of the postmodernists. They stood in the ashes of World War II when all the old stories broke. All the modernist promises failed. If you believe the strong man will save you, welcome to Auschwitz. If you believe communism will save you, welcome to the gulag. If you believe capitalism will save you, have a bomb or two. All the promises of modernism failed, and in the ashes, the postmodernist looked around, and instead of settling for despair, they built something new. They got to work. And for the first time, they didn't reach for one true right story. They searched for something more communal. I can't be a dad or a husband or a CEO all by myself in a corner. The only way any of those titles work is if they are awarded by another human being who is free and whole. We build meaning together. It's what we owe each other, our honesty and their freedom. We help people understand who they are and how they fit so they can face the void prepared and supported, bolstered. I can't make it hurt less, but I can hold your hand and we can face it together. Isn't that what the mystics of every culture and time kept trying to say? We're all connected. You, me, this chair, that rock, those stars, we're all connected. If that's so, then we should find snippets of that universal story hidden in every time and place. It's not something that was discovered on NBC in 2016. 2016's The Good Place was the most recent cover of a song so ancient we no longer remember its start. It was a mother looking at her baby, teaching it how to live in the world and not be just about themselves, but about each other. It was the first mother that discovered altruism and taught that to her child. That's when the song started. And we still sing it. We don't just cooperate because it works. We love each other because that's how we become real. In the very last season of the show, Eleanor and her friends get a chance to build a heaven that actually works, the best heaven they can come up with. And they discover that the very last thing they have to add in order for heaven to be perfect, it's a door. Where only when you're ready, when you've done all the things and seen all the things and lived all the life and tried everything you wanted to try, and you're just ready, then you walk through the door and you cease to be. Because what good is perfection if you're already sick of it? Isn't it okay just to be done? Is that allowed? Do you see why we need new stories? For over one quarter of the population of the planet, the book of Revelation is the one true story. And it got schooled by Eleanor Shellstrop. It got beaten by a 2016 TV comedy. We need new stories for new times, and we need to tell them together. So here's mine. We live in confusing days, and I genuinely don't know what's going to happen next. I couldn't tell you 5 years from now. I couldn't tell you 20. I can barely tell you next week. But my dream is that somehow we defy all odds and don't exterminate ourselves. And someday, maybe a decade, maybe a thousand years, our children walk among the stars. And they look back on us and marvel that we survived a world where death was not a choice, where every breath of air and every morsel of food came complicit in systems of abuse and coercion. And if children are born, those future parents won't tell them the story right away because it'll be too much for their little hearts. If I die having moved my corner of the world 1 inch closer to that dream, I die happy. But what if I don't? What if all I do is move the world 1 inch closer to freedom, and then the most likely thing happens, which is that we are too smart for our own good and remove ourselves from the future? Well, my hope in that case is that something else would evolve and would try again. The building blocks are all still here. The planet will spin just fine without us. But what if it's not a cycle, it's a spiral? What if they wake up and every time the system reboots, as soon as they get smart enough to understand their own death, they become smart enough to ensure it? And this cycle just continues and continues and continues until the carrying capacity of the planet is finally just zeroed. Is that it? Is this the only place where these building blocks exist? Have you seen the out there? The story has to continue someplace else. But suppose they're caught in the same trap too. And we all just flail and smash ourselves against the wall of consciousness until the heat death of the universe. And assume, just so that we can end the story somewhere, that there is no other universe and there never will be. This is our one shot. In that case, I say this. There was an infinitesimal moment when the universe woke up, regarded itself, and said, "Wow, that's amazing. And oh, that hurts." And then it went back to sleep. And if all I ever do is take my infinitesimal fraction of that moment and choose to live in the amazing instead of the hurt, I still die happy. Those are my stories. They're both happy. They're both sad. If any part helps you, you're welcome to it. I need them both. I need one for bright days so I know what to fight for. And I need one for dark days so I know when to rest. Because you can't just breathe in all the time. You got to breathe out. You can't be awake and fight all the time. You got to sleep. So I need two stories. And that makes sense to me because it's the fewest I can hold while holding both loosely. If I have one, I get too attached. If I've got two, I can balance. Those are my stories. What are yours? At the Odd Fellows Club, we started a new thing. We call it Screen Free Nights. So every week you can either have like an Odd Fellows meeting, or if there's no meeting on that Saturday, there's a Screen Free Night. So every week there's something to do at the lodge. And on the most recent Screen Free Night, which was last Thursday, we had, I don't know, like five guys and one lady. And they started out playing a trivia game. And the nice thing about like low-level trivia is everybody gets it right once. So everybody gets to feel like a winner. And everybody feels a little bit dumb. And it's cool. Like, we just have fun hanging out in the space. And then the next thing was the next game that we played, because the way it works is you get there, and at the start of the day, there's a bucket, and you got to put your phone in it. It's a phone bucket, or a fuck it. So you put your phone in there, and you're playing the game, and then the next game was just boxes. It was just boxes, wooden boxes, and there were different sizes. They nested down. So there was eight boxes from big to little, and in the eighth box, there were like eight little rubber bouncy balls. And your job was to stack up all the buckets in such a way that one of them was turned upside down and acted as the catcher. And then your job was to bounce the little bouncy balls off of the big buckets and make them land in the little bucket. So here's six fully grown human beings going, bink, ba-bink, bonk, ba-bink, bank, bink, bonk, bink, bonk. Where did it go? Where did it go? And everyone's throwing them, and they like line them all up in a row. And nobody told them what to do. Nobody said, you got to line them in a row. Someone just did it. And then nobody said, you got to take turns. Someone just grabbed two and like rolled them so they went, ding, 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 ding. Well, actually, it went, no, because the big ones are biggest, so they would be deepest. So it went, do, 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 do. And then it missed. And then they tried again, do, 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 do. And they missed. And then they just moved. Nobody told them to, they just moved. And the next person came up, and they threw their two. And the next person came up, and they threw their two. And everyone's walking around, and they're catching the balls while they're flying off the table. And finally, one goes in, and six grown-ass human beings go, yeah! Which would never have happened if we had been on our stupid phones. We need to connect with each other. Yeah, the movie What Dreams May Come is a really beautiful examination of the Christian dogma that suicides go to hell. And I don't if you haven't seen it, I encourage you. It's starring Robin Williams, and it's beautiful. It's not just a beautiful story, it's visually stunning. It's called What Dreams May Come, starring Robin Williams. And Robin Williams' wife commits suicide. And he gets to heaven and sets out on a rescue because he is stunned to get to heaven and realize that she isn't there. And he says, "What do you mean suicides go to hell?" And he refuses to accept it. Absolutely beautiful story, because it is, I think, the Christian doctrine of suicide as a mortal sin is one of the most evil things that they've managed to come up with. Because it's bad enough that you're suffering so much that not existing is better than existing. But then on top of that, you need to feel shame, and you need to make all of your friends and family feel shame, and you need to make everyone who ever loved you worry that you're now being tortured forever. Because the reality of the situation is, when your ability to cope and the shit you're going through don't match up anymore, then you make a choice. So if you want to help someone who is going through it, you either help them cope or you help them suffer a little bit less. And that's a project we can do. But just saying, "I hope that works out for you," or "you're going to go to hell," helps no one. Ugh. Makes me mad. Sorry. Questions, comments? Yeah. To sleep, perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep, what dreams may come. That's not a line you write if you already know what dreams may come. This question, this struggle, this has been with us from the start. Shakespeare knew it. Plato knew it. We know it. You stand today in the footsteps of your ancestors, surrounded by friends. So go and make the most of the time you have.